is Friday, December 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the Paris climate talks are extended by one more day.
We're talking about a document here that has gone from initially 43 pages to 29 pages just Wednesday night. Now it's Friday and down to 27 pages, but some very key elements of it remain to be agreed on.
North and South Korea conduct high-level talks, and we'll hear all about singer Adele's new hit album. It's all ahead. French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius has announced at the UN climate talks in Paris that the conference will go into Saturday. I'm joined now by VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez, who is in the French capital. So, Luis, what did Mr. Fabius say regarding the extension of this climate conference?
Well, these talks now going into more than 2 weeks. And Mr. Fabius has said all along that they have to agree on all parts of whatever comes out. And so we're talking about a document here that has gone from initially 43 pages to 29 pages just Wednesday night. Now it's Friday and down to 27 pages, but some very key elements of it remain to be agreed on. And as you can imagine, those elements have to do with money. Who will pay for the transition to greener energy in the case of developing countries?
Well, at the moment, maybe this is just speculation, but who will be paying for that?
That is the big question in the final hours of this conference. They've been talking for 2 weeks now, these delegates from 196 countries. And the United States, the European Union, very much want to split the cost. They want all nations to make a commitment both to reduce carbon emissions, but also to shoulder some of the cost of converting to cleaner energy and to dealing with the effects of extreme climate events. A coalition of nations, developing nations, and also some wealthier oil-producing nations that say, wait a minute, no. The developing nations say, the industrialized countries are responsible for a larger amount of pollution, therefore they should cover the whole cost. And there's also the argument that the developing countries simply don't have the economies to be able to make these very expensive transitions.
Well, apparently also China is saying that its president, Xi Jinping, spoke by phone with U.S. President Barack Obama to discuss climate change. Has that been verified by the White House?
I have not seen confirmation of that conversation, but certainly U.S. and Chinese officials have been very much in touch. This goes back several months of cooperation, new cooperation between the two countries. China has more recently committed to shouldering responsibility for cleaning up and also setting very ambitious goals for reducing carbon emissions, something that it had not done before.
All right. Thanks very much, Luis. That is VOA's Europe correspondent, Luis Ramirez, reporting from the climate talks in Paris. Thanks a lot, Luis.
Thank you.
Now for reaction on social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Olin Akisholu.
Hi, Sarah. Well, there has not been a super big reaction on Twitter specifically to the news that the deadline was extended, at least so far. The official English language Twitter account for the COP21 summit, it tweeted that the deadline was being postponed a few hours ago, and that got a few retweets, but not an overwhelming amount. I'm actually expecting the reaction to pick up as the news begins to circulate a little bit more. If we look back at Twitter since the summit began, the big hashtag people are using to tweet about it is hashtag COP21, and that was used 2.3 million times in the past month. But if we look back at the past week alone, it was used more than 750,000 times. So there is a lot of interest and anticipation for whatever deal comes out of the summit. Before the announcement that the deadline was being extended, Secretary of State John Kerry, he tweeted last night, "Past midnight in Paris for COP21. Everyone working hard. A critical moment, one that we can't afford to miss."
Any other interesting trends on social media right now?
Yeah, well, a topic that's just started trending on Facebook is New Zealand. Earlier this morning, news broke that the country has selected a new flag design through a preliminary referendum. The voters chose a black and blue flag with the country's famous silver fern and four red stars. Those who voted chose from five potential flag designs, and now there will be another referendum to determine whether to replace the existing flag with the new design. Another trend is Michelle Obama. She was featured in a rap video produced by the comedy site College Humor, where she encourages young people who are on the fence about what to do with life to go to college. Twitter users started tweeting their own raps that relate to the Obama family and tagging them with hashtag FLOTUS bars. Of course, FLOTUS stands for First Lady of the United States. A lot of people seem to be having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, that does sound like fun. Well, thanks a lot, Owen. That's International Edition's Olin Akisholu. Well, in other developments, the 2016 U.S. presidential primary election season begins in a matter of weeks, and Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump remains at the top of most polls, even though he has offended numerous groups with his off-the-cuff, blunt style. But early surveys often have proved wrong in the past, and as VOA's Greg Flakes reports from Houston, a candidate from Texas could deliver a surprise in contests early next year.
Supporters of billionaire real estate magnate and former television program host Donald Trump seem unbothered by his blunt and often offensive statements. Even when he says things that are proven to be wrong, they maintain their zeal. Kirby Goidel, who works on public policy research at Texas A&M University, says many people see Trump as refreshingly frank.
His persona is brash and speak your mind, and it's okay if you're wrong as long as you're saying things that need to be said.
Goidel's assessment is supported by VOA interviews with voters on the streets of downtown Houston, like Terry.
I don't like his attitude sometimes, but, you know, I guess he'd be a good president, though, for the country. I don't know.
Well, why is that?
Well, he just seems to be strong, I guess, you know, and that's what we need, a strong leader.
Another voter, Beth, says Trump addresses the fears that she and many other citizens have.
I just don't feel like, the government is really focusing on our safety here in the U.S. They're more focused on immigration and bringing immigrants in and not really focusing on, the American citizens that are here.
But Trump is not the only candidate addressing these concerns. Recent polls in Iowa and South Carolina show growing support for Texas Senator Ted Cruz, especially among evangelicals who are concerned with moral issues. Still, Donald Trump remains in the lead in most polls, and he's even tying Cruz in his home state of Texas in the most recent polls. Bill O'Sullivan, treasurer of the Texas Patriot PAC, which supports conservative candidates and causes, says that while Trump dominates the media, Cruz is building a strong organization in Iowa.
Cruz has been working on an important factor in Iowa, which is the evangelicals, and he has an enormous ground game there. There's two problems with Iowa. One, it's a caucus. And it's very organizational driven. And I don't know what Trump has for ground game.
Even though he's been in the U.S. Senate for nearly 3 years, O'Sullivan says Cruz, like Trump, is also seen as a Washington outsider who refuses to go along with business as usual.
There's this huge anti-Washington thing going on in the Republican Party. Now, people are starting to perceive Cruz as being not much different about being anti-Washington. And he even has a phrase which is pretty smart to come out with, the Washington cartel.
A consistent 40-plus percent of voters favor Trump in national polls in which he's matched against Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton, who's usually shown winning, but not by a very large margin. Clinton has a slightly wider margin when matched with Cruz. But that could change if Cruz is able to steal some of the spotlight from Trump in the early 2016 primary elections. Greg Flakes, VOA News, Houston.
This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
The dwarf planet Ceres is the largest object in the asteroid belt, which lies between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter in our solar system. And now scientists say they may know what's behind the dwarf planet's mysterious bright spots as well as its origin. Studying data gathered by NASA's Dawn spacecraft, the researchers outlined their findings in a pair of new studies published in the journal Nature. In one study, researchers found evidence that the bright spots are actually deposits of a salt called hexahydrite. Researchers writing in the second study examined the composition of Ceres and found that it contains ammonia-rich clays. Finding this material has the scientists thinking that Ceres may have either originated or had been formed with the material from the outer solar system and not its current location in the asteroid belt. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear singer Adele's latest album. North and South Korea are holding high-level talks for the first time in nearly 2 years, and both sides are expressing a desire to improve long-strained ties. I'm joined now by VOA's Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden, who's in Seoul. Well, Brian, this meeting is happening after 2 years. What do the two sides hope to achieve with these talks?
Neither side is coming into these talks for the first time in 2 years, as you just said, with high expectations of major progress happening. Both sides are looking for incremental progress. North Korea wants to get more inter-Korean trade reestablished. For example, they want to reopen this cross-border tourism program that was in place till about 2008 when there was an incident where a South Korean tourist was killed by a North Korean soldier. It got all kind of murky about what was happening there, but that kind of cut off that whole program. That's what they want to start doing, more of that economic outreach again. South Korea would like more of these inter-Korean separated family reunions, similar to the one that just happened about a month ago. That was the first time in about 2 years. So they want to make that a regular and permanent type of setup.
Well, meanwhile, on Thursday, the UN Security Council held a meeting on human rights in North Korea, and North Korea has been accused of numerous human rights abuses. As that was occurring, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un boasted that his country has developed a hydrogen bomb. Well, what is known about that?
Okay, so there's a lot of speculation that those two things are connected. There's a lot of speculation that those two things are connected and that this is a very typical pattern of behavior exhibited by North Korea. Whenever something happens by which they feel threatened, they make some sort of provocative statement or a provocative act of some kind. In this case, Kim Jong-un made some sort of reference to the claiming that North Korea has the ability to detonate A-bombs and H-bombs, he said. Hydrogen bombs are much more powerful than atomic bombs. North Korea has detonated 3 nuclear devices in the last decade, but outside analysts don't believe they have the capacity to develop a hydrogen bomb at this point. But it seems to be kind of a statement just to kind of bring attention to North Korea that they have this very deadly nuclear power and to kind of signal to the world that, hey, if you want to criticize us, you want to come after us, well, we are still a very deadly force to be dealt with.
Well, I would think it would be difficult to actually determine the extent of North Korea's nuclear or hydrogen programs. On the other hand, the country's human rights abuses have been quite well documented.
Yeah, it's hard to document anything that's going on inside North Korea. The human rights situation has been documented largely, from what I understand, through the testimony of people who have been able to get out of North Korea. North Korea's nuclear program has been documented by a lot of analysts who, I think for the most part, are studying satellite imagery and maybe through some contacts with people on the ground. But that's unclear on how they're getting that information.
All right. Thanks very much, Brian. That's Brian Padden, VOA's Northeast Asia correspondent, reporting from Seoul. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views, presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
International Edition. British pop singer Adele is breaking new records as her latest album, 25, is a huge hit with fans and topping the music charts. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins International Edition's Jim Stevenson to talk about the phenomenal success.
Hello, it's me.
Adele just debuted at number one on next week's Billboard Top 200 Pop Albums chart after selling 3.38 million first-week copies of 25, and that's a historic figure. It's the biggest total in the history of Nielsen SoundScan. That's the point-of-purchase sales tracking system, started way back in 1991. And this is also significant because Adele didn't allow streaming of 25. These are direct sales and downloads. And she's also poised for a million-selling second week, which would also make chart history, because that hasn't happened in the 24-year history of SoundScan.
Well, we've talked a lot about Taylor Swift being very shrewd in the business end of music, and it appears that Adele is following in those footsteps.
Adele is very shrewd because she went away for a while. She lay low. She didn't overexpose herself on social media. She made us want her back. And this is how the public is responding. But, you know, there's a price for everything. And in Adele's case, that price is taxes. Because just this week, the British government hit her with a £4 million tax bill for 2014. That works out to about $6 million U.S. dollars. Now, Adele didn't really do anything in 2014. She was home, you know, writing and recording 25, raising her little boy, laying low. But she still gets that huge tax bill because of royalties from the sales of 21, which came out in 2011 and dominated the year's markets. And she also had big success in 2012 with the James Bond theme Skyfall. Now, Adele's estimated net worth is about £50 million, or about $75 million. So it's not like she's going to be penniless because of this tax bill. But if she wants to raise a few extra pounds, she can always hit the road. And that's what's going to happen. She's going to kick off her world tour on February 29th, 2016, in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Right now, we have the UK and European tour dates, but we're going to have to wait a little longer to see when she hits North America.
The fact that Adele hasn't streamed this effort, do you see this as perhaps becoming a template for other artists?
Well, of course, Taylor Swift led the charge last year with her 1989 album, and she wanted to bring attention to royalty payments, to how small they seemed in these streaming services, and she definitely put that on the table. Streaming is still relatively new. The royalty structure is evolving. Adele can get away with it because she sells so many albums the old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. Other artists, it's not so easy for them. Streaming is the wave of the future, it seems, and they have to play the game.
We play the game each and every week with Ray McDonald, who is your Top 20 Countdown host. Find him on Twitter at
Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much for stopping by, Ray.
Thanks, Jim.
Hello, how are you? It's so typical of me.
That is the latest song by singer Adele. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
High-level representatives of nearly 200 countries have assembled in Paris to hammer out a global agreement to hold back rising temperatures. By most estimates, if global temperature rise more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, the results may well be catastrophic and irreversible. 14 of the 15 warmest years on record have occurred since the year 2000, and 2015 is on pace to be the warmest year of all, said President Barack Obama at the Paris Conference's first session. No nation, large or small, wealthy or poor, is immune to what this means. So what must be done? First, all major economies must put forward decisive national actions that will reduce their emissions and begin to turn the corner on climate change, said the president. Already, nations responsible for most of the global emissions have set their targets. By 2030, the European Union will cut its emissions by 40% from 1990 levels. The U.S. will cut its emissions by 26 to 28% from 2005 levels by 2025. And China's emissions will peak by 2030. The president also called for a mechanism to review countries' commitments and financing to help developing countries address climate change. In essence, said U.S. Special Envoy for Climate Change Todd Stern, the idea is to accelerate the transformation of the energy base of the global economy from high to low carbon. The good news is that we are already moving in that direction, said President Obama.
Last year, the global economy grew while global carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels stayed flat. We've proved that strong economic growth and a safer environment no longer have to conflict with one another. They can work in concert with one another.
There is such a thing as being too late, and when it comes to climate change, that hour is almost upon us, said President Obama. But if we act here, if we act now, if we place our own short-term interests behind the air that our young people will breathe, and the food that they will eat, and the water that they will drink, and the hopes and dreams that sustain their lives, then we won't be too late for them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.